Shoot the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and my guest doesn't really need an introduction. I mean, if you don't know who Fernando Duarte is, then you better just turn the show off now and just listen to something else. Fernando, welcome to the show, mate. How you doing?
I don't know if I can live up to that introduction.
Come on. I'm flattered. Come on. Listen, I had Tim Vickery on a few weeks ago. I've had Gab Marcotti on. I've had a few others. And, you know, slowly, I'm adding more jewels to the crown here.
Yeah, well, you had all the good ones first, yeah?
Well, you know...
It's almost like I'm your Europa League guy.
No. I'm your Europa League guy. I'm more like your Intertoto guy at the moment.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been a while since, we've been trying to get me on for a while and we're finally doing it. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, mate. How have you been keeping during the whole COVID pandemic?
You know, man, try not to get too weird out about the whole thing. It's an uncanny situation, a very unprecedented situation for many of us. I think for most of us alive today, you had to be pretty much be alive during the Spanish influenza pandemic in 1918 to see something as dramatic as that in terms of like how it disturbed or how it impacted the people's lives, and even the Spanish influenza hasn't left, although killed a lot of people, hasn't left what we can say like a dent in people's psyche like it has now. I mean, we're gonna have a huge, I think, mental health hangover after this after this thing. I mean, so you know, I work with news and I work a lot with hard news these days. So it got a bit overwhelming at points, but also it was nice to see people rising up to the occasion in terms of like not being selfish and looking after each other. I mean, the working from home part was easy for me because I used to work from home a lot of the time when I was working for Global, even for The Guardian. I used to be kind of like basically the office. I was a walk-in office basically. So it wasn't a massive disruption for me. If anything, I'm glad I'm not commuting to London every day. it's excruciating. I mean, I have a pet hate. I hate trivial conversations on the train when people are talking loud about something. People never talk about interesting things on the train. They're either shouting at their mobile phones or they're having absolutely bollocks conversations that nobody is interested in listening to. So I don't miss that. It's why all the time I gotta have the best earphones in the world because I want to create my own bubble, listen to my podcast or my music, and not listen to other humans. I'm very antisocial with that.
Well, listen, I think everyone needs their own kind of escapism, and I'm similar to you in the sense that whenever I use London Transport, I try not to use it as much as possible, but I don't really want to communicate with anyone. I just want to be left alone, and it's not me being rude or antisocial, and that's just how I am. And I think there are a lot of people out there that you know, they can talk to anyone, especially on London Underground. But for me, it's one of the most uncomfortable places I've ever been. Anyway,
I haven't got a problem with talking to people. I would happily engage in conversation with people. It's when people are kind of like having a monologue and you get trapped to that really annoys me. It's like when in a packed train, somebody picks a mobile phone and starts. And makes a phone call that definitely can wait, doesn't need to be done at that point, because you're listening. You know, it's not like all of a sudden, you know, you don't know somebody's whispering and you don't know. No, people are usually talking about, oh yeah, you know, yeah, Jigsy, yeah, we had a pint. I'm on the phone, I'm on the train. Really? You know, just text. These days it's so easy. But anyway, it's usually because I can be a miserable bastard sometimes. Am I allowed to say bastard on that?
You can say whatever you want, mate. Honestly, the stuff that we've said on this show in the past, I'm surprised we haven't had any cease and desist letters in the past. But
So there's going to be plenty more of that. There's plenty more of that where it came from.
Bring it on, bring it on. Well, I'll tell you what, while we're talking about London Underground, you've been working in the media for numerous years. How many times have you overheard a football conversation with just someone you thought, I need to step in here?
All the time. That's why I love Twitter. You can jump in anybody's conversation, you know, for good and worse, of course. You know, sometimes people think they have to jump. Sometimes they should jump, but they don't. But yeah, I think it's one of the few universal languages. It's one of the few situations where if you butt in the middle of a conversation with people who look very scary, they're not going to kick your head because it's football. So when I came to this country 20 years ago, it was the only kind of like thing I could do to basically try to, you know, insert myself in British society. Especially, I went to live in Liverpool, which was very different from everywhere I had been, although it's a place that I love dearly. It's my spiritual hometown. Mm. Every time I go back there, I have goosebumps, and I love that city for so many reasons. But in the beginning, jumping into football or talking about football was the way to, you know, to belong. So I don't have a problem at all being in the London Underground and jumping into someone's conversation. Some people won't like it. And sometimes you're talking about football and somebody will jump in. I think a lot of social norms get thrown out of the window when football comes into the picture.
Yeah, I can understand. So I'll tell you what. Now, here's the scenario. You're on the train, you're on the tube, and you overhear a conversation between two guys, and one of them is talking about Neymar, and he says he's overrated. He isn't the best player at Paris Saint-Germain, and he's not better than Hazard. I think you know where I'm getting at with this. There's a certain radio station, which I'm not going to mention, but a former Chelsea player said that about Neymar. Me, personally, I think Neymar is one of the most incredible footballers on the planet right now. He's incredibly gifted. I think he's been unlucky in the past with injuries. But for them to say that he's better than Hazard, first of all, what do you feel about that? And secondly, what is your take on Neymar overall?
Well, opinions are like buttholes. Everybody's got one. They usually are ugly. And most of the time, they stink. So, you know, opinions are opinions, you know. People will prevail. I mean, it's funny to talk about Neymar because I got involved on a Twitter discussion yesterday that perhaps if I hadn't had the second Corona beer, I would have started, but was somebody saying that Neymar was better than Ronaldinho. Isn't it time that we admit that Neymar was better than Ronaldinho? And I just lost it and said, listen, come on. It's just ridiculous. Don't try to rewrite history. So if that is allowed, I don't see why somebody with Chelsea links or some kind of Chelsea, I don't know, sympathy would think a lot of Eden Hazard, which is a very gifted player. It depends on which Neymar you're talking about. I mean, overall, he's a great guy. Perhaps if he was born in a different, if he was playing a different era, not so dominated by Cristiano and Lionel Messi, he could have had a proper shout at best in the world. Okay, not that he would have won without them too, but he was very unlucky. It's a bit like Andy Murray. We talk about Andy Murray. He probably would have won a bit more majors, a couple of more other majors, if Federer and Nadal and Djokovic weren't around. I think that the problem with Murray is that this discussion started when there was only Roger and Rafa, and then you had Nole as well. But I mean, the guy's a talented player. He's the best Brazilian player of his generation by a mile. But he's been unlucky with injuries. And when he won important titles, he was playing second fiddle to Messi, but then who wouldn't?
Yeah.
So I totally understood when he took the leap to go to PSG, because trying to make, to become some kind of Royal the Rovers thing was part of the motivation. I'm not going to discuss if he wanted more cash or not. It's none of my business. It's part of the industry. But I think he gets a lot of bad rep that in my opinion is unfair. Even in the World Cup, when he was being a bit histrionic, people forgot that he was one of the most hunted players on the pitch. You know, he gets whacked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not defending behaviors or saying that sometimes I'm not denying that he overreacts and that the tumbles get a bit annoying. But people have a lot of time to hate him, and I find it a bit weird, you know, that the players that isn't the guy who punches people in the face. Actually, he did got in an altercation with a PSG supporter once, but he's not a violent player, you know. He's not a disloyal guy. He is a temperamental kid, but who isn't, you know? Remember Ronaldo in the beginning, in his early Man United days. I think he gets a very unfair reputation at times. Yesterday I was saying that if he was called Neymar instead of Neymar, perhaps the English press would be a bit more accepting of him.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Well, I know that he suffered that injury at the 2014 World Cup. I think it was Zuniga that brought him down and injured his back, which then put him out of the semi-final against Germany. I think Thiago Silva was also out of that game. And we know what happened between Brazil and Germany. But do you think it would have made a massive difference had Neymar and Thiago both played in that game? I know it's buts and maybes if Martini had balls, etc., etc. But
I think mentally the team would be in a different place. I'm not saying that they wouldn't lose. It was a very good German side. But I would love to talk to Filipão, to big Phil Scolari one day, say, what the heck were you trying to do? Because even with Neymar and Thiago in place, that kind of game would still be a game where Brazil would play for a ball, kind of would try to inflict damage, play, you know, in no scenario Brazil should have gone gung-ho against Germany, especially in the beginning of that game. But I think that wouldn't have happened if the team wasn't so all over the place. Because Thiago's absence forced a reshuffle in the defense, put Dante in the game, playing against guys who knew every kind of, like, of side of his playing. He also put David Luiz in a different side of the defense that he likes to play. Took Neymar out of the team, and Neymar was carrying Brazil. I mean, if you look at Brazil and Chile, it was pretty much Neymar dragging the team along, and he even took the penalty that could have basically made Brazil go back home had he missed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it would have been a different game. I'm not saying that Brazil would have won, but certainly not lost the way they did, because fair play to Germany, they played the game, they took the chances, but like everything they did on that night worked. I mean, some of the hits, some of the balls that Toni Kroos, some of the shots were like FIFA shots. The one that you seem to be playing with a control, and Brazil were all over the place in that space of 6 minutes. So, yeah, I guess the outcome would be different. But then again, if my grandmother had two wheels, she would be a bicycle.
All right, okay. I'll tell you what. Well, staying on the subject of Neymar, you mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi. They are up there, aren't they? They're out of space at the moment. What does Neymar have to do to be seen as great as those two? I know Ballon d'Ors and personal achievements and whatnot, but going to Paris Saint-Germain, people will say, oh, it's a farmers league. Of course he's going to smash it out there. But I don't think that's quite fair on the player, is it?
Well, I don't think anybody will ever be like the two guys who ever mentioned. Yeah. We are absolutely blessed to be witnessing Cristiano and Messi in action. Wow. It's like watching Kobe Bryant or watching Michael Jordan. You have two of these guys, mm-hmm. and going head to head, winning different things. So, I personally don't think the Neymar is in the same league as these guys yet.
Right.
I don't. First of all, I don't think anybody else is in the league of Lionel Messi, for example, right? Because I think that he's gifted, right? While Cristiano, I have the impression Cristiano worked more for his things. Messi has his unfair advantage. I know that Matthew Syed will be very pissed off at me because he's got this amazing talent theory, etc. But I'm South American. I'm superstitious. I always think that there is the fate of the universe or the hand of the universe in some of the stuff. So. It's not for me to say that Neymar is not going to be a great player. I'm pretty sure he has all the conditions to be remembered down the line as one of the greats. But he needs to win things.
Yes.
He needs to win things. One Champions League with Barca isn't going to cut it. Because, you know, otherwise Danilo, the left back, would have been amazing. The guy's won titles everywhere. I mean, I think alongside Ronaldo, the only guy in activity who won the Premiership, Serie A, La Liga, right?
Wow.
Something like that. Right. There was a statistic that erroneously attributed only to Ronaldo, and then Danilo tweeted, say, oh, what about me, etc. So I think what's separating Neymar from this guy is more titles, obviously, but titles like in which he's the protagonist. And I think he's got a pretty good chance now. Look dead and buried against Atalanta. And my goodness, when he missed the first sitter, I just felt really spooked. I said, uh-oh, this is going to be a weird night if by any chance they get into trouble. And at the end of the day, he played an amazing game as a midfielder. But PSG does not need Neymar as a midfielder. PSG needs Neymar up front and scoring goals, because you saw it happen. They only were able to put some kind of pressure proper into Atalanta after Mbappe got in and allowed Neymar to play more up front, because before he was playing away from the box. He's got to do everything 3-4 times harder to make an impact from that part of the pitch. So, yeah, they are alive. They survived that game with the most unlikely of the outcomes. I actually joked when Eric Choupo-Moting was came on, because I said, yeah, that's the reek of desperation, and the guy ends up scoring the winner. You know what? I'm the king of this kind of stuff. I remember, like yesterday, when I was at Stade de France in 2006, watching Arsenal and Barcelona, and Giuliano Belletti gets to come in, and I look at a Brazilian friend and said, yeah, now they're gonna turn this game around. Yeah, famous last words. I should have learned with that experience. But you know, PSG alive. Again, they were very lucky with the draw. They're gonna play Leipzig, a team without Champions League experience, but also without anything to lose. It's a very tricky tie on our hand. On the other hand, the kind of tie that if you ask any PSG player or even supporter in the beginning of the season, okay, you're going to be in the semi-final of the Champions League for the first time in 25 years. It's one game, and you're going to play. You could pick of all these teams. I'm pretty sure they would have picked, Red Bull Leipzig. I'm not taking anything away from those guys. Those guys from Germany, and I'm pretty sure that if they play as organized as they did today, they can cause another major upset. But under a more reasonable point of view, there's a very good chance for PSG to make a Champions League final and keep the dream alive of winning that Champions League. I think that this would give Neymar a lot of cred if he was part of a Champions League winning side of PSG. Even if he doesn't score a hat trick at the end or anything like that, the final, anything like that. The fact that they pretty much got there with him, it would start changing, I think, perceptions. And certainly, I mean, we were informed today, I think, that FIFA will do the World Player of the Year trophy. Whoever Champions League, of all these players they're talking about, De Bruyne, what's the name of the Polish guy? I totally forgot.
Lewandowski,
Neymar, and even Leo Messi. Whoever wins the Champions League, probably going to win that trophy as well, you know. So this is it's a double whammy for Neymar. He could deliver the Champions League to Paris, part of the whole reason why he was bought by, you know, enough gold to drown him. Yeah, you deliver that trophy, and he will also put a strong claim to be World Player of the Year. So that would be a massive, you know, massive thing for him.
Yeah.
But it's so unpredictable the way the competition is designed, with the only one match. I love it. I think every neutral is enjoying it immensely. As a Liverpool fan, I enjoyed immensely seeing Atletico being, you know, being stopped by Leipzig today. But it is open to everybody, and we probably will have a better idea of how teams are lining up after the quarterfinals. But you know, if you it's a good season to be a Man City fan as well, because they have a good shot at this. They came back very good from the break from the pandemic, the long pandemic winter. They hit the ground running. I mean, they did some amazing games, some poor ones as well. But in Europe, they are in the shouts. You know, I won't be surprised if they are in the final. I won't be surprised.
Yeah, because they need to get past Lyon, and then they face the winner of Barcelona and Bayern Munich, which is going to be a fantastic match, I believe. But we could have Paris.
Lyon, for example.
Yeah.
I've seen them playing. I did some work for League One matches this season, and I saw them playing a couple of times. I saw Paris a lot. Lyon, an amazing team, gung-ho. They put the knife between the teeth, they go for it, which they did against Juventus. It was the only way they could have done it. But have they still got stuff left in the tank? We need to see, you know. It's a great side, but now the stakes are getting higher and higher. I don't know if they will cope with Man City the way Man City can play, with so much flourishing up front and a much stronger midfield. Remember that in the French league, PSG run away with it.
Yeah,
and it's a team without midfield, right? Without a creative midfield. It's incredible the lack of balance in the squad. When you think of the amount of money they spent, look at City, who spent a lot of money too. You got a very strong midfielder, perhaps the best midfielder in the world these days, Mr. Kevin De Bruyne. So it might be a step too far, but you know, as a neutral, I'm hoping Lyon can keep the fairy tale alive.
Yeah.
Although I'd love to see Guardiola playing against Barcelona. You know, I love the story. The stories behind. I think every sports writer and sports journalist is a storyteller, and they're never there just to report on goals and talk tactics. Perhaps Michael Cox being the sweet exception. Michael was born to talk about and John Wilson, etc. People like the stories, people like the drama, people like the microcosm of sport as something really beautiful. And so it would be lovely to see Guardiola facing, you know, the creator facing its creature. Although we could argue that Johan Cruyff started it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be interesting to see how Rudy Garcia goes, because at Lille he had a good 4 or 5 seasons there. Then he went to Roma, and I think his stock kind of went down. Ended up at Marseille, and now he's at Lyon, and he's guiding them to quarterfinals of the Champions League, having knocked out Juventus. So I think it'll be a very, very interesting match.
Since the early 2000s, because they signed a bunch of Brazilians, including Juninho Pernambucano, who I love to bits as a player. I mean, even though he always played for rivals, I'm a Flamengo supporter in Brazil. He played for Vasco, so he was part of a very, very good team, a Vasco team who won the Libertadores in 98. And even as a Flamengo fan, I love watching that guy play. So I have a soft spot for Lyon. It's a city that I know as well. I've been there. I really hope they do well. But, you know, let's see what happens.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned Pep Guardiola. He's got a striker there called Gabriel Jesus, who has kind of really come into his own this season. Listen, Aguero's boots are big to fill. I mean, not literally, because I think his feet are like size 8 or something like that. But, he's coming. He's
size 8, come on. There's nothing wrong with size 8, yeah?
Hey, listen.
The average size in the UK, so, you know.
Oh, okay, well,
there's nothing wrong with being
I guess I have clown feet then. But I think Jesus scored over 20 goals this season. He scored at the Bernabeu, and he scored against Real Madrid at home, so I think he was the first player to score home and away against Real Madrid since Van Nistelrooy. I think that's the stat anyway. I'm not sure if I get that one right, but talk to me about this footballer, because again, he's a little bit of an enigma, so to speak, because I remember when he came to the Premier League, not many people knew much about him, unless you're a Football Manager connoisseur or a Brazilian football expert. It took a bit of time to get to grips with the league, but he looks like precisely the player that Guardiola wants as a number 9.
Well, and hasn't Guardiola worked in brilliantly?
Mm.
He was already very... When he played for Palmeiras in Brazil, he announced himself in the Brazilian national team in a game that Brazil kind of like pretty much needed to win against Ecuador, in Ecuador, where Brazil hadn't won for like decades. And he hit the ground running on that game and pretty much ran the, he pretty much was the man of the match. And Brazil went on a streak of results in the qualifiers that pretty much made Tite's name as the national team manager. Then he got signed by City. I mean, the potential is always there. I just think he became more useful guy in terms of like hitting his goals, but also working for the team. I think people were very, very easy to dismiss him after the World Cup. He had a horrible World Cup. Let's not discuss that. I think Firmino should have started many of the games. It was one of Tite's sins in that campaign. But he's a young guy. You don't write off a guy that soon, you know, that early. And I think the response is coming now. I mean, he's putting on a great work rate for City. It is the future of that club. Nobody's expecting him to be the new Sergio Aguero, because it would be very unflattering to Sergio Aguero to just imagine that he could be so easily replaceable. But, you know, Bosch got something. And that line with him, Sterling, it's a nightmare. When you look at City's, you know, attacking potential, I think I'll be really surprised if Liverpool and City weren't squaring, fighting point for point next season, or even if City escape of the league at some point, because they are a remarkable side. What happened this season, in my opinion, was the perfect alignment of stars, which included City being weird, you know.
I think we knew at the beginning of the season that the Champions League was going to be their priority, so I think nothing less than winning it will be a failure, I guess.
I agree with you. I mean, it puts a lot of burden on the players, but do you really think Pep Guardiola came all the way just so he could win the Premiership a couple of times?
Nah,
I mean,
no chance, no chance.
Not even the most patriotic and English supporter or English football fan would think that. No, he was brought to deliver the Champions League. He and Guardiola himself is obsessed with that trophy. He tried to win it after Barcelona. He hasn't yet. So it's another very special. Imagine if he lifts it. It would be very redeeming for him as well, because he's been questioned. He's been under scrutiny as well, Guardiola, I think.
Mm. Can you do it without Messi? He's been asked.
Well, no, what he did last season was amazing. You know, City's dominance of the Premiership was brilliant. But it's in Europe that the people are gonna think it's their legacy, City's legacy, or Guardiola's legacy will be evaluated in terms of number of Champions Leagues. That's my hunch on that, and that's how I would do it as well. Not saying, oh yes, you won the Premiership, big deal. No, but, you know, if you want to be a major club, if you want to be a global club, you got to win the big years, you know? Otherwise, you're just going to be like a huge shark in a kiddie's paddling pool.
Well, this is it. I mean, they'll be known as underachievers if they don't win the Champions League. They haven't got to the final. I know they've got to a semi-final before, but they haven't got to a final. And people have said in the past, oh, well, if they don't win the Champions League in the next few years, then Mansour's going to, you know, take his money and run. But I highly doubt that. This is a project that they've been working on for years. And, you know, the Arabs or people from that part of the world, they're winners. And I highly doubt that they will quit just because, you know, they haven't won a Champions League. I don't think this is a final roll of the dice for Guardiola. I think because of the way that the Champions League has panned out, with the way the draw has become a little bit favourable in terms of they've got arguably one of the easiest draws out of the teams remaining, the odds are stacked in their favour. But then again, as you mentioned before, they go through, they face Bayern Munich or Barcelona, two clubs that Guardiola knows too well, but they've both changed and they've both had different fortunes, so to speak. Barcelona look like they're regressing in a very big way, whereas Bayern Munich, they're becoming more and more of a powerhouse.
I don't think as well. I don't think either that the Emirati will basically bail on Man City, just like Abramovich didn't do it with Chelsea when, you know, you waited what, 9 years or 8 years?
That's right.
For Chelsea to win the league, and I don't really think that he was expecting that to happen, and on that day, because everything was stacked against Chelsea. I was fortunate to be in that game. It was one of the craziest games of football I've ever seen. But, you know, fair enough. Chelsea refused to roll out and die, and won in the end. You know, if you're a Chelsea supporter, that probably is the day that a lot of kids were. If anybody had did the business and got the Mrs. Pregnant, a lot of DDS had been born. You know, or Franks, or even David's, because David Luiz played one of the biggest games of his career in that game.
Yeah.
But I, it's not the final roll of the dice either for City. But this season, they have a very good chance. And if they don't win it, having lost the Premiership the way they did, and not winning the other trophies, the FA Cup, for example. Did they win the League Cup? I don't remember.
Last season, they won all the domestic trophies, didn't they? So,
no, this season.
Oh, this season, no. It was, who won it this season? Who won the League Cup? Who won the 3-year trophy this season? Well, it was City. They beat Villa in the final.
Yeah. So, if they finish this season with only the League Cup, it will be deemed as a failure.
Mm.
You know, the way they lost the Premiership, they were like, they had lost it by Christmas, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you know, and if they don't deliver the Champions League, we'll be failing. I would think that even some supporters, hardcore supporters, would think, yeah, we drop the ball. Doesn't mean that they need to crucify people. That Guardiola will have unlearned football, but the expectations deposited on that project. Yeah, it would be a failure in a season. Not an abject failure, but a failure.
Yeah, I agree. But the thing is, they have made a bit of a statement of intent by signing someone like Nathan Ake, because we know how bad they are defensively. Stones isn't great. Otamendi isn't great. Laporte obviously needs someone beside him. And I still believe that Vincent Kompany was a huge loss for them. And I think Guardiola was a little bit arrogant, thinking that Fernandinho could play that central defence role throughout the season. So bringing in Nathan Ake, I think, is a good signing. It's a shrewd signing for them. And also the fella from Valencia to replace Sane. Whether he comes good or not, that's a different story. But at least you can see that he's thinking ahead, whereas teams like Man United are just sitting on their hands.
I love Pep. I sometimes get annoyed by when he kicks his toys out of the Prem, like every manager does. As a Liverpool fan, I didn't like when Klopp dismissed Atletico's way of play as if it was something illegal to do. You got to suck it up. You weren't able to win that thing. But I also think he's not going to do two seasons in which his team will be away from the title race by Christmas. Do I think he made mistakes? I agree with you in everything he said. He tried to reinvent the wheel in some aspects, yes, and it backfired. Still, I don't think it yet explains how many games they lost and how many points they dropped along the way. It should have been enough for them to put some more pressure over Liverpool. But it's just me.
Well, how many points did they end? Did they finish the season with this year? I know last year they got 98 last season?
No, didn't they do the 100 thing?
They did the 100 the year before, and then when they won the league last season, I say last season, but the season, you know, we know what I'm talking about. So they accumulated 100 points the season before. They accumulated 98 the season before after that. Sorry, and this season I don't know how many points they ended on. So my question to you is, surely those two seasons where they almost hit 100 points in both seasons, surely that raised the bar, didn't it? I mean, what more could they possibly do apart from getting the highest points total, winning the league at a canter?
They finished with 81 points.
This season, yeah? Okay, well, there you go. 81. So, yeah, so 17 points less than the year before.
Yeah.
So there you go. So, yeah. So, big difference.
They have nine defeats,
yeah.
They lost more games than Man United.
Wow.
That was the bizarre thing. Because, you know, if you look at wins, they had 26 wins, yeah, and three draws, but nine defeats. Wolves had the same. They have as many defeats as Wolves.
Yeah, they lost twice. They lost twice against United. They lost at Norwich, didn't they? They lost at Norwich 3-2,
yeah,
first few weeks of the season. Did they lose at Anfield?
No. I think it was a draw, wasn't it?
Draw. Yeah, it was that one where Pep was screaming at the fourth official twice. That lovely little gif we keep seeing on the internet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they've had a bit of a topsy-turvy season, so yeah, I agree with you. If they don't win the Champions League, it will be a failure. But then again, anything can happen, mate. And it's the old cliche, isn't it?
Yeah. Somebody asked me on Twitter today, or put one of those questions, who's going to win the Champions League? And I answered, well, the team that win the final game. And a lot of people were kind of like giving me hell. But it's so unpredictable. It's one game. You know, even the final in the traditional format is already unpredictable. Remember, like, when they talk about 2004 and the Mourinho year?
Yeah.
That game started with Ludovic Juli going 1-1 with the Porto keeper,
was it?
Missing the chance and pulling a hamstring. And basically becoming used to the match. Yeah. You know, Monaco scores on that game, the story would be totally different. But I think people sometimes forget that there's logic, there's method in the madness of football, but there's a lot of madness as well, especially in a season like that. Look, we need to think of stuff that sometimes doesn't go through our heads. Before the game, yesterday's game, for example, PSG had played two official games in 5 months, both of them finals, cup finals. And one of them, they play like 120-something minutes before penalties, etc. So they are knackered.
Yeah.
You know, it makes a difference. And played against a team very organized, very playing Atalanta playing this very enthusiastic brand of football. So it's we got to think of them. The teams were playing for longer. The English teams not for that long, but a lot of factors are in play here.
I would like to see one of the matches returning to Europe.
No. I think that the traditional format is the one.
You reckon?
Yeah. I wouldn't like to see. Either you create a system where you make a mini World Cup at some point in one city, or you go back to the other format. Because what you're gonna do? How are you gonna decide who plays where? Yeah. You know, the current system, you play a quarterfinal, let's say, against Bayern Munich. You know you're going to go to Munich, and you're going to have to come to where you are. If you decide to do one matches now, where are you going to do it? You're going to base it on campaign? I don't know.
I'd do it this way.
You want to do one city like they're doing now, and then I think it would be an amazing festival of football, or you just resume with the earlier format. I mean, but that's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I would do it in the way they've done it this way. Maybe not at the quarter-final stage. When you get to the semi-finals, have it as like a mini tournament, because that way there won't be as much travelling for the players. You can do it at the end of the season. So at the same time, there might be a bit of a break between, I don't know, the FA Cup final, whenever all the leagues finish. So you can do it a week or 2 weeks, so everyone's had a similar space of time to recover and to prepare. As I said before, there won't be much travelling because it'll be in the same city. And I think it'll be more of a spectacle in that respect. And obviously, it's the sponsors and everyone else involved from a financial perspective that have a lot to gain from it. So you can see more and more sponsors and more adverts. So I think everyone wins, to be fair.
Yeah, well, if the TV people are on board, that's very important as well.
Yeah,
which I think it would be great for great TV, because it would increase the drama. You'd make a lot of commentators be very excited all the time. I agree with you. It could be a good idea.
Mm. And can you imagine the traction on social media?
Not in the traditional format. If you're gonna keep, you know, the way that, okay, it's gonna be either in one of the two cities, then I think it becomes a bit farcical. Well,
that's a fair point. But see, I'm a traditionalist, so I'd love to see the Cup Winners' Cup brought back. Fixture pile up galore.
Well, I mean, the original format was brilliant as well. But then again, if you support Liverpool, two of your Champions League titles would never have happened if the old rules are in place.
True. Very true. Very true. Well, Fernando, is there anything else that you'd like to discuss, mate? Because we've been going on for how long? Close to an hour, mate.
No, I didn't even feel that. it's up to you if you want to ask me something about Brazil. Or...
Well, they won the Copa America, didn't they? And obviously World Cup 2022 is round the corner. I don't know what to expect from this World Cup, to be 100% honest with you. Not because of where it's going to be, but because of the time of year. Do you think that's going to make much of a difference in terms of the quality of the competition?
It depends on the delivery of the stadiums. I mean, if they are like microclimates, you know,
yeah.
We might change the story. I have the same doubts as you do. But I don't think we can even think there ahead. Remember that the South American qualifiers have been suspended because of COVID.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Brazil, the biggest country in the continent, is in the middle of a very, very bad pandemic. More than 100,000 people died in Brazil because of this pandemic. It's outrageous. It's a disaster. It's a catastrophe. So it's even bizarre to think of doing football in South America at the moment. And the format there is a league one, so you have to, everybody plays like 18 matches. Either they change the format, or it's going to be very difficult to do this properly. And this will affect, I think, the way a lot of teams prepare. I'm of course, it's not going to affect the World Cup in such way, but it's bizarre because you can have proper injuries in the middle. You know, when are you going to do it now? You know, right? It's we don't even know if it's going to be a normal tournament because the way that the teams haven't played, etc. We could have some really, really strong surprises there. I don't think it's going to be as dramatic as Brazil not qualifying for the first time. I don't think it's we're anywhere near that. But, you know, there could be a couple of scares there.
It's going to be another one of those controversial situations. And by that, I mean, you're going to have the domestic leagues competing till, say, November. Then the players are going to go on international duty at the end of November, probably, or, I don't know, probably beginning of November. I don't know how long they need to prepare for this tournament. And then once the tournament's complete, they come back. Do they have a break? And then they resume the league? I don't know. I really don't know.
Obviously, FIFA didn't have any idea of what would happen in the world. I mean, not FIFA, not the IOC. Listen, we didn't have the Olympics this year either. So, yeah, I think we should celebrate what we get. Champions League, yay! Yeah, because I don't think the disruption is going to stop now, man.
No, of course not.
As we speak, we have cases popping up against in France. The UK is quarantining people coming from Holland again. And obviously, at some point, these countries are going to adopt reciprocity. Even New Zealand, perfect New Zealand, is having to deal with another outbreak.
Yeah.
I don't think we're anywhere near the exit of the woods. And I think that if it gets to a point where human life gets threatened, screw sport, man. Sport can never be as important as the health of the population in general, you know?
I agree, but it's down to the population to grow up and be responsible. And I think that's one of the problems that we've had in the UK. I think people haven't been following protocol, and this is why we are where we are at the moment.
Well, the UK doesn't seem to be... I think the UK reacted late. Yeah. I mean, people have been saying that. But for the fear that the NHS would basically cave in, I think the NHS proved to be like the real crown jewels in the UK. And God bless the NHS. Bless every one of those nurses and doctors in the front line. Because they did a hell of a job.
Right, one more question. The Brazilian Championship. What have you made of the season?
Season barely started. Some funny things happening and still. I don't think the season should have started because there's cases of COVID in the first division, in the second division. So it's a bit bizarre where the country is overwhelmed by a pandemic that killed 100,000 people that you should be having football. But they decided to have it. I'm a Flamengo fan. Flamengo lost the two first games. And obviously, it's a crisis after what they did last season. They did a Liverpool last season. They won the league with rounds to spare under the guidance of the now, again, Benfica manager, Jorge Jesus.
Yeah.
They outplayed everybody. They won the Libertadores with a dramatic win against River Plate in the final. And it was a year that every Flamengo supporter is still pinching themselves. At some point this season, Flamengo were the Rio de Janeiro champions, the Brazil champions, and the South American champions. Not bad at all. And considering that they only lost 1-0 to Liverpool at their World Cup Club Championship, it was a very good year. So, yeah, it's very difficult to build up on that. And Jorge Jesus got back to Portugal. And they're being managed by Domenech, What's yep. Dominic's first name? I forgot.
Torrent.
For Guardiola, former staff member of Guardiola's entourage.
Yeah, he was at New York City FC as well, wasn't he?
Yes, and Raymond Domenech, I think. Raymond Domenech was a French. Oh my God, what's Dominic's name?
Dominic Torrent.
Dominic Torrent. My haters will basically lambast me for not remembering names. I forgot the name of Robert Lewandowski, for heaven's sake.
It's late.
It's interesting to see, like, foreign managers in Brazil. You know, you got Jorge Sampaoli in Atlético. Without the pandemic, it would be an amazing season to take a look as stuff. But I don't feel like I can't get engaged with football in Brazil at a time where it's not safe for this game to be happening. It's not. So my mother hasn't left home, her house in Rio since March 17. How the heck?
Wow.
You know, you can be having football is beyond belief. You know, we have a president that's been infected twice with COVID. So, you know, it's not. You complain about what the British are doing. Brazil is a nightmare. There's never been a proper lockdown, and the result is that you got a huge number of infections, a huge number of deaths, and it's nowhere near it. No, and you're over, and you have people trying to deny that it's happening, and I'm very kind of like taken aback by what's happening.
The thing is, Brazil's got what 200 million people in there. I mean,
215 million. 215,
yeah. So it's a bit more difficult to police than the UK.
Still, you know. We don't have a health system as good as NHS, a universal care health system is as good. A lot of people have to go to private medicine, and a lot of people don't have the means to do that. So it's a disaster, man. I mean, it's more than 3 million cases confirmed. Thankfully, more than 2 million have recovered, but you had 105,000 deaths. More than 100,000 lives. That, you know, surely this didn't need to be that high.
Yeah, scary. So, yeah, moving on. In terms of the nation, obviously you said that your mum hasn't left her home for a good few months. How do you think the government are going to attack this? Are they going to lock everything down? Are people going to follow these rules and procedures?
President Bolsonaro described the novel coronavirus as a little flu. So I don't think he's going to change his mind about that. He's been very vocal against lockdown. And he criticized state governors and city mayors for closing down things. He's been very dismissive he's been underestimating a lot the potential threat of COVID. I don't think he's going to change. He didn't change his stance on that even after he got sick. So
didn't he say that there are no fires in the Amazon as well, or something along those lines?
I don't remember what was the exact words, but he says that the NGOs are always kind of like exaggerating the picture. When the problem is that even the government's agency of monitoring, the government agency that monitors the Amazon was saying the official numbers were high, and then he fired the guy, the National Institute of Amazon Research. Yeah, he's a difficult guy. It's a controversial guy, just like Mr. Trump, and not a very conciliatory president, but he won the election. He's the current chief of state, won the election fair and square. And the checks and balances in Brazil will have to be in place for whatever happens. But it is a very delicate moment, indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, let's not end this on a sour note. Give us a bit of pleasant news, Fernando. Come on, tell us something that we should look forward to. Give us something happy. Give us something to...
Something happy? Well, we're going to have a cracking end of the European season. Look at... Even the Europa League is appetizing. You got United and Sevilla, which is going to be an amazing game to watch because Sevilla kind of like owns the Europa League, right? Right? Yeah. They won it like gazillions of times in recent years. So be interested to see how they handle this reborn United. And then on the other side, you have Inter and Shakhtar. Shakhtar with the Brazilian legion with Tyson scoring amazing goals as well.
11 Brazilians in that squad, mate. 11.
Yeah. But it's been a tradition.
Yeah.
Where they, well, you know, William came from there. Fernandinho came from Ukraine as well. Remember that?
That's right.
So yeah, no, there's a tradition of having these guys around. And then everything to play for in the Champions League. I think this is positive, given how down we were, all, you know, in March, April, and even beginning of May, how low we all were with this disease spreading and killing people all over the world. I think we should never forget that despite the fact that football is back and everything, we still have to honor the memory of all the people who lost their lives to this disease, and because we've been humbled by Mother Nature in a way, we are the dominant species, but we are by no way unbeatable. And nobody knows how this started, but people know that there are a lot of other viruses that we don't know about. So I believe one of my favorite Beatles songs is "While My Guitar Gently Weeps," when George Harrison says, "With every mistake, we must surely be learning." And I do hope we are, because this thing caught us big, big time. And it showed that a lot of things have to change. So the next one, or a worse one, doesn't do more damage.
Fingers crossed that.
Yeah, it's difficult to finish with a lot of happiness, but I think learning and sobriety shouldn't be totally dismissed. You shouldn't feel, you know, it's okay if you listen to this. It's okay to be feeling bad. It's okay to be feeling jaded a bit. It's okay to have a sour feeling, even though you might be having fun, you have been visiting your relatives again, you have been in contact with your people again. It's okay to still feel pretty crap about what happened, because it was an eye-opener. And a lot of people died. So, yeah, it's okay to be feeling, still be feeling anxious and still be feeling a bit sad about what happened. Yeah, you're not alone.
Well, Fernando, thank you very much for your time, mate. That was brilliant. Thank you.
No, not a problem. It was a pleasure. I mean, I had promised you to be here before, and I'm glad to be here. I'm grateful to be here.
No, I'm grateful too, mate. And hopefully next time you come on, I'll have a bit more structure to this.
Guys out there, stay safe still. Stay wise. Don't drop the ball. It's still a long way to go, but, you know, enjoy life.
Of course. Of
Respect
course,
your people, you know, be nice to people and enjoy football, because at least football's back.
That's right. Well, Fernando, thank you ever so much for your time. Do you want to mention anything? Have you got any upcoming projects or articles that you've been writing, anything like that?
No. At the moment, no. I mean, I might have news next year. I think I'm going to go back into writing football books. I have a couple of ideas, but so far, you know, if you want to look into Brazilian football history, I got a book called Shocking Brazil that was released in 2014 and updated later on. It was all about the famous games Brazil lost in World Cups.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit dated because it doesn't include 2018.
But it includes 82, though, yeah?
It's 1950, 66, 74, 82, 98, 2010. And then 2014 in the electronic edition. On paper, it's only six. In the Kindle edition or the online edition or the electronic edition is 7 games. It's not that dated because most of the history hasn't changed. But yeah, it's my little baby in English.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, guys, those of you still listening, you can give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot Your Defence. We have an Instagram page. So until next time, take care.